Hey, Kentuckiana, Katie George here. How would you like to save an extra $1,000 on a brand new Chevrolet? Well, right now, Coil Chevrolet in Clarksville is offering ESPN Louisville listeners an extra $1,000 off the purchase of any new Chevy when you use the promo code COIL75. So visit coildeals.com, find your new Chevy, then mention COIL75 at purchase and save an extra $1,000. Coil, where the flag is flying and Kentuckiana is buying. Restrictions may apply. See dealer for complete details.
The teams are back in action. Get that same feeling starting a new job with UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker and take pride in a good day's work. Earn $14.50 per hour and up to $150 per week in bonuses. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville.
You're locked on the V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
All right, let's bring our next guest in right away because I need a comment from her on this. Lara Overton is the part of the broadcast team for the Indianapolis Colts. Off a bye week, they go to Detroit and play there. And Lara, I know from your pictures on Twitter or Facebook or somewhere, you have a big dog, right? Don't you have a big old dog?
I do. Tugboat is his name.
Tugboat, that's it. I couldn't remember his name. All right, well,
yes.
I have to tell you the truth. I have a rescue dog we found in the middle of the street, actually. He's adorable. He's a big boy. We did a test. You know, you'd send the spit off, and they find out what he is. And
it's the canine version of 23andMe, basically.
Yeah, or Ancestry.com. Right, it's exactly. He's mostly Lhasa Apso, some Havanese, some Maltese, and a little bit of undetermined English herding dogs. So he's a big old boy, and right now he's laying right next to me, and I'm just telling you this because at some point in the interview, I may start sobbing, and as much as I'm delighted to talk to you, I don't want you to think it's because of you. I don't know what he ate, but something is dying in there, and he is, oh man. So I just wanted to make myself feel better to find out if your dog occasionally gets a little bit the same way, or is it just Simon giving me these little presents here?
No, he absolutely does. He's about 160 pounds.
Good God. Wow, so, he's a big boy.
He's huge. And I'm jealous because you're at home and you're able to, you know, work side by side the dog, which I became very accustomed to when we weren't in the facility for months on end. Well, I'm back at the facility today because we have some things to record with a few of the players, but I was just texting back and forth with my husband. He's doing a CLE, continuing legal education from the house today, just a seminar, and he's like, the dog is snoring so loud, I literally cannot hear the guy leading this seminar with the volume all the way up, because he's like an old man. He's like 3 years old, but he's like your grandpa on Thanksgiving, where like he falls asleep in the recliner and like snores so loud and like emits, you know, things that should never hit the human nose. Like, it's
So you feel my pain right now, and I feel bad for the guy. I think he wants to go have a walk. And this morning, when it's his usual walk time, he's also a little bougie, and he won't walk in the rain. And it was pouring this morning, so he just went and took a quick little pee and came back in. And my guess is he wants to go out, but I don't have any other co-hosts floating around the house, so I kind of got to be here. So, so Simon, you're gonna have to hang in for 54 more minutes, dude. So hang in there, buddy. But wow, I am telling you, peeling onions has nothing on this dog right now. Oh my God, I'm getting lightheaded. Yeah, poor little guy. So anyway, okay. So now let's regroup.
if I don't hear from you, if all of a sudden you go completely silent, I will know that it was, you know, the final straw that took you out.
If you just hear that and then nothing, that's me hitting the floor, and you know, then you can, you know, just to do a soliloquy there till we get to commercial break. Speaking of regrouping, these Colts are regrouping, not in the sense of a loss, but they had a bye week. Did it help any players in terms of health of the team? Are there any guys that were nicked up a bit then that the coaching staff feels better about this coming up for the game against the Lions this week?
Absolutely. First and foremost, that being Darius Leonard, after missing two games with that groin injury, he looks to be back at full strength coming into not only this week against the Lions, but a critical stretch of games in the month of November where the stakes get really high and you're playing, you know, Baltimore, Tennessee, and Green Bay. So this is the gauntlet of your schedule. So first and foremost, Darius Leonard is going to be one of those guys. Also, it seems like that Michael Pittman Jr. is progressing toward a return. He had that compartment syndrome in his lower leg and, of course, really high expectations for the top draft pick in the 2020 draft for the Colts. It was, of course, Pittman, then Jonathan Taylor. And this rookie class, with as impressive as it's been, you really want to see Pittman get out on the field with some consistency and be that bigger body weapon. He's certainly a different dynamic than the other receivers that the Colts have, and he's someone who Phillip Rivers built a strong rapport with in that time that they had in training camp. So those are two of the primary guys. Then you had a couple of other guys who just had some things, like, you know, Anthony Costanzo missed one game with the rib. Of course, he came back to play against Cincinnati, but you wondered if he was yet 100%. This really gave him an opportunity to get as healthy as he can possibly be going into this next 10-game stretch.
Let's talk a little bit about these two teams and where they are, and not just the individual health of the Colts bouncing back from a bye week, but the Colts are 4-2, which sounds pretty good, but they're also a team that's got, frankly, Lara, a bunch of question marks. The offense has been kind of spurty and spotty. Phillip Rivers has been up and down. T.Y. Hilton has disappeared a bit. The defense hasn't been as strong as it was early in the year. The Lions are kind of in the same boat. They're 3-3, but their last two wins come against 1-6 teams, so I'm not sure what you can read into that. So I guess if there's a question in that is, how much of a litmus test game for the Colts are the Lions, do you think, this week?
Well, you can certainly say that neither of these teams coming in are getting bonus points on strength of schedule. If this were college basketball, this would rank really low because, of course, you know, early in the season, the Colts started out, you know, against the Jags and the Jets and the Vikings, and things didn't really get difficult until you faced Chicago and Cleveland, and then you started to see their play really elevate. And Detroit is a really good team. I mean, they're coming off back-to-back wins, coming off of their bye. They had a thrilling come-from-behind victory last week on the road, so they're certainly tough. With the Colts, you've seen the consistency from the defense, and the offense has yet to match that consistent level of play that you've seen from your defense. Now, I do think that you have the twofold Phillip Rivers. You saw the Phillip Rivers that we saw in Cleveland, and then you saw the Phillip Rivers in those three quarters against Cincinnati, in which, you know, threw three touchdown passes and, you know, was just a complete force in bringing that team back from a 21-0 deficit, which would become the largest home regular season comeback victory for the Colts when they knocked off Cincinnati just before the bye week. I do think that the Colts all around are the better team in this matchup. And that's what I would say objectively, not even being affiliated with the team. You know, with Detroit, they, of course, have Matt Stafford, and they have some pieces there. But collectively, I don't think that they're as strong as teams the Colts have beaten when you look at the fact that, you know, the Colts knocked off Chicago, and they certainly had a great opportunity. They should have beaten the Cleveland Browns. Now, you mentioned, you know, the inconsistency with Phillip Rivers. You certainly hope that Phillip comes in with that type of performance, the consistent performance that he had against Cincinnati, and continues to do that now as we get into this stretch. You mentioned, though, T.Y. Hilton, and they don't call him the ghost because we haven't seen him appear and show up. That's not the reason they call him the ghost. But it's really been a sense that there just have been, the way these games have played out, whatever it is, nothing has gone the way of T.Y. Hilton. And it's not because he's not putting in the work, not because they haven't attempted to target him and get him involved. So he's really due for that breakout kind of a game. He's incredibly locked in. He knows, especially, I mean, not just what he's playing for in terms of this team, but he's also going in, he's in a contract year. He needs to establish himself to get that next paycheck, and he's going to have the productivity after battling injuries through 2018 and 2019. I mean, he had the injury stretch in 2018, but he had Andrew Luck, who was his best friend on the team, the guy who he came in the same draft class with. So he was able to overcome some of the complications that he had, or the struggles that he had with injury. And then in 2019, you go from, we thought it was going to be Andrew, okay, now it's Jacoby, and he's trying to get on the same page with Jacoby, and he has the injuries through that stretch as well, with the lower leg. Now he comes into this completely healthy. He said he had the best offseason that he has, but you have, you know, no OTAs. You have very limited time in training camp. You have no preseason opportunities for him and Phillip Rivers to find this continuity. So one of the things that he and Phillip have tried to do in terms of establishing the rapport is they talk about their sons because they both have emerging football stars in their house. T.Y. has two sons. Phillip has a couple of sons. And Phillip's son plays quarterback and receiver, and T.Y.'s son plays receiver and running back. So that's been something that they've connected on. So it's no fault that I don't want anyone to think that, oh, there's issues with the quarterback and the receiver. You know, T.Y. and Phillip aren't on the same page. That's not it at all. I mean, there's some of the closer connection that you have in that locker room. It's just all amount of getting in that right game where you have T.Y. have that 100-yard-plus performance that you're used to seeing from him.
I'm not suggesting he's not going to have a good game or Phillip Rivers isn't going to have a good game, but the fact of the matter is the Colts have what some people think is the best offensive line in the league, and they've been very good at protecting Phillip Rivers, but they've also really provided some great opportunities for Jonathan Taylor, and the Lions have had a hard time stopping the run. I mean, again, you get the impression that if the Colts offensive line can do what they've done, they won't have to have a big game in the air to win this game because they're playing one of their strengths right into the Lions' weakness.
Well, and you know, you don't want to have a scenario like we saw in Jacksonville when Phillip Rivers is throwing it close to 50 times a game. That's really not, you know, what you want to see. You want to, one of the things that Frank Reich has said is that he really wants to continuously mix up this offense, and that's in terms of, you know, run versus pass. It's you know, up tempo versus, you know, some slower paced cadence as well. So, you know, it does seem to be a prime scenario for this rushing attack led by Jonathan Taylor to get going. But it's been one of those head scratcher type of things where with all that you came in with on this offensive line, those same starting five carrying over from last season, you would have thought this run game would be more productive than it has been thus far. For whatever reason, they just have not created those big breakaway opportunities. You have Jonathan Taylor. I mean, he is tough to take down. You know, he hits holes well and all of that, but he hasn't had those big explosive type of plays that we saw him have at Wisconsin. Now, you don't really know where that falls, if it's on the O-line, if it's necessarily on, you know, Jonathan and being more patient in his runs, maybe having the vision or whatever it is. But yeah, I think that that's been one of the things that is, I don't necessarily want to say disappointing, because you've seen opportunities where they have tried to capitalize and they have been able to be somewhat efficient in the run, but it's not to the caliber that anyone expected it to be. And you do have to take into account, without Marlon Mack, that was a huge, huge blow to this running back room when you lose a guy who had a 1,000-yard rushing season last year. And one thing that was interesting that we learned this week, despite being out for the season, Marlon Mack has opted to stay in Indianapolis. He's doing his rehab right here in town, and he's been coming in to go to some of the running back meetings to help tutor and mentor Jonathan Taylor. So at some point, that is going to pay dividends, and this seems to be an opportunity. This is probably the best opportunity that you're going to get to establish that rushing attack when you look at the strength of opponents that the Colts are going to see in the month of November.
I think if you were asking about, and you talked to Frank Reich, and he seems to be pretty candid with you, which is good, because when I ask you questions, you generally are able to tell me, yeah, this is what he straight up told me. And I know coaches aren't going to share with you or anybody else everything, but he seems to be a pretty straightforward guy. If he had his way, what's more important to him to get going right now a little bit? A big plays out of the quarterback, or get Jonathan Taylor to find some chunk runs in there? Which would he put more of an emphasis on, do you think, as he envisions how he'd like this team to play?
Wow. You know, one of the things that he's always emphasizing is that defensively, they want to make teams one-dimensional, you know, and so obviously that's one thing that he is not going to allow defenses to do to his offense and making them one-dimensional. I would say at this point, you know what you've got in Phillip. You know what he's capable of doing if you are going to go with a pass-heavy play-calling attack. I would say the emphasis needs to be on getting this run game going, because we have yet to see it. And this is a make or break period. I was just talking to one of the guys earlier today, and he said, coming out of a bye week, when you're going in, you know, week 8, you should be hitting your stride. This is going to be, this is where you're defining who you are, is in this thick of the schedule when you basically get to that stretch between that, you know, game 7, 8, game 12 of your season. So I would say, because we haven't seen it yet, because we haven't seen a total breakout game from your rushing attack, and that's not just Jonathan Taylor, that's combined with Nyheim Hines and also with Jordan Wilkins in there as well, mixing things up. That's where I would say you're kind of putting the emphasis at least on this week. You're going to try to get that going early. If it's not working, you know what you have in terms of the weapons that you have in the passing game, not just with your receivers, but Phillip Rivers is heavily utilized, and effectively so, his tight ends. So I would think first and foremost, you try to get that run game going. You try to get that run game in a rhythm early on, and then that's just going to open up the rest of your playbook if you can start really establishing yourself on the ground against Detroit.
You know, it's pretty cool talking to Lara Overton here from the Colts. Last question before I let you go is, you would have thought perhaps this would have been a recurring conversation that we would be having when you replace a kicker of the legendary status of Adam Vinatieri. And yet, I mean, I don't know, maybe elsewhere you're getting talked about it, but I mean, Rodrigo Blankenship has been nothing short of spectacular, so nobody's saying a word. This guy's everything they could have hoped for. He's been terrific.
Oh, absolutely. And everyone questioned why, after camp, when they made the roster cuts, they went with the rookie in Rodrigo Blankenship, the undrafted rookie who you took a chance on the University of Georgia, who obviously had, you know, an incredible collegiate career. But you already had Chase McLaughlin sitting here, who had kicked for you last season and was great when you brought him in a really tough scenario when, you know, he was sharing the locker room with Adam once, you know, Adam had that injury and everything. They were dealing with his situation and what they were going to do moving forward. I think that Rodrigo Blankenship has certainly proven what Chris Ballard and Frank Reich saw through camp in why he was the choice at the beginning of September when you made those cuts. He is so refreshingly unique, and I think a lot of your specialists are. You do see a lot of kickers and punters that are just incredibly unique individuals. He is so confident in who he is, and not in an arrogant way. I mean, in terms of, you know, embracing these kind of fun hobbies that he has, you know, the Legos that he loves and Star Wars, and he candidly talks about all of these things that typically, you know, people might think are quote unquote a little bit nerdy or whatever it is. He just wholly embraces this, and the confidence that he exudes as this very unique, engaging personality transcends onto the football field when he gets into these high pressure situations. The consistency with which he has kicked through the first six games of his professional career is nothing short of impressive when you talk about filling in for a guy who is hands down greatest of all time at his position in Adam Vinatieri. I mean, no one has done it longer. No one's done it to the success that Adam Vinatieri has seen. And so one of the best things about Rodrigo Blankenship in being so confident in who he is that when he walked in the door and he was being asked about, you know, taking the reins from Adam Vinatieri, he said, you know, I'm not trying to be anyone else's replacement. I'm just trying to be me and be the best kicker I can be as the kicker for the Indianapolis Colts in this season. I'm not looking prior to this, and I'm not looking past this. So it was such a mature perspective to have as, what, a 21-year-old coming out of college. So he is just phenomenal. I had a conversation with him for a TV show a couple weeks ago, and he is so much darn fun. And I tell you what, once his football career is over, we will not have seen, which is hopefully a long, long, many seasons, many years away, but whenever that does come to a conclusion, I will tell you that he's going to take one of our jobs, because he went to the journalism school, School of Communications there in Athens, and he is certainly going to go the way of either, you know, podcasts or hosting or being an analyst or something, because he is a fantastic personality. He has great perspective. He is so dynamic and engaging, and I'm really having so much fun being able to follow his rookie season. Well,
those glasses are made for marketing, for starters. I mean, he's got those big Coke bottle glasses.
Oh, I mean, hey, you don't get the name Hot Rod for nothing.
But the other thing that's cool, when you talk to him, please tell him, I'm sure he'll be thrilled, since A, he has no idea who I am, and B, even if he did, I don't know how excited he'd be. He has my birthday. We have the same birthday. January 29th.
Outstanding.
Yep. He's exactly, well, scarily 40 years younger than I am, but it's the same date, January 29th. How about that?
Hey,
so there
hey,
you go.
Age is nothing but a number.
Well, that's it. So
just
tell him.
Philip Rivers.
Yeah, so when you see him, tell him we'll have a cake together. We'll have a separate birthday party together.
I will make sure that he knows. And hopefully you guys can blow out your candles and your respects and welcome in the next year ahead.
You'll enjoy this only because he's not here today. Then the listeners will appreciate it too, and you know him, so you wouldn't enjoy it if I didn't tell you. He's listening, so he'll be mad. I'm going to tell you this. Speaking of blowing out the candles, you know, in COVID, you're supposed to be sensitive to blowing out candles. So the big-headed producer, my son, was over the other day, and we had some candles burning, which my dog is reminding me again now why we had them burning, because you're trying to create a little better environment. And we said, okay, time to go. Let's put them out. And rather than simply put the lid on the candle, which, you know, they all have, they come with the big lid you just put on it and then it goes out, he decided he was going to wave his hand over the top and that the breeze would put it out, and he waved it and absolutely caught it, just like Rodrigo Blankenship would for a kickoff, and knocked this candle 15 feet across the room, red wax all over our white wall, all over our white rug, all over the living room, because he decided to put it out by waving his hand.
Well, at least nothing caught fire, I guess, if there's any reprieve to this whatsoever. But, I mean, I would expect, you know, with the, you know, the athletic genes of the Valvano family, I would think Nick's hand-eye coordination would be a little bit better than that.
Well, I'll say this. He got good distance on it, so for what that's worth, he still has a lot of forearm strength. So, God bless you. You are a half-full kind of girl. That's why. He hit it, and rather than say he ruined our rug and ruined our wall, at least he didn't set the place on fire. I will admit that. So you got that right. Lara, take care of yourself. We'll listen for you on the broadcast. Be well. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Always great talking to you.
All right. Lara Overton with us here on The V Show on ESPN 680 105.7. This is breaking news. The Chicago White Sox have hired Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa as their new manager. La Russa is 76. He managed the White Sox from 79 to 86, and his firing was owner Jerry Reinsdorf's great regret. He last managed in 2011 when he led St. Louis to a championship. And I will tell you, Rick Bozich, if you're listening, you and I will be on the same page, because I will be rooting hard for him, largely because of tweets like this one. Jeff Passan from ESPN, this is not so bad. Now, we've had these guys on the show, and Adam Rittenberg's a great guy, but the hiring of Tony La Russa has ruffled feathers in the White Sox organization. A number of employees have concerns about his ability to connect with younger players, and how will he adapt to the field after being away for 9 years. This was a Jerry Reinsdorf decision, simple as that, which is unbelievable. Because then Adam Rittenberg says, has ruffled feathers in the White Sox fan base, too. Come on, Adam. They could have hired Jesus himself and somebody would have been mad. I mean, that's, fans are always mad, whoever you hire as a coach or a manager. That's,
well, yeah, what's Jesus ever done to coach baseball?
I just don't see how this works, Rittenberg says. I hope it does, but it doesn't add up at all. Why wouldn't it add up at all? He's 9 years removed, not 90 years removed. 9 years removed.
I think it goes back to our discussion with the analytics and that stuff, and that the question will be, can Tony La Russa combine what he did for so long as a manager and what kind of has come up in those 9 years, to where the analytics and the information age has really changed a lot in those 9 years that he's been gone, and how does he implement both of those?
He
and
was
basically
one of the,
not fight
he,
the GMs with that. Yes, I know he was one of the trendsetters.
He was one of the guys on the cutting edge of it. He's not going to disdain it, but he's also going to be smart enough not to take Blake Snell out when the guy's pitching a masterpiece in the World Series. I mean, one of the first responses is, I've never heard people complain about hiring a Hall of Famer and a World Series champion before. That's just embarrassing. And that's how I feel. So, yes, I'm rooting for the guy. I mean, what the hell's the guy got to do to be above reproach to be hired? This is great. This is a typical I'm smarter than everybody fan. It's Mike McCarthy 2.0. We have a winning core. Now we need a proven winner as our coach manager to get us over the hump. Not even a half season in, the players have completely tuned him out. Just a terrible hiring strategy. Yeah, that's a good example, Mike McCarthy. Because first of all, if you're reading some things, there were evidently some telltale signs that that some of these things that are going on, if they are really going on in Dallas, were going on in Green Bay to begin with. And so that's not shocking. La Russa, I've never heard that. I've never heard players say they didn't respect him, that they didn't respect his baseball knowledge, that his teams were unprepared, that they didn't play hard, that he was a bad strategist. He was always innovative. He was the guy that started batting his pitcher ninth. I mean, batting his pitcher eighth before anybody else would do that with St. Louis. I mean, how quick they are to dismiss it because it's not some hot, sexy young name. So, yeah, as a guy in a different demographic, and he's, considerably older than I am even, and I've told you the story on the show before. I got to spend the whole day with him once at an event we were doing in Virginia, literally the whole day. It's a crazy kind of thing. You actually speak three different times, once for one group at breakfast, a different group at lunch, and a different group at dinner. So it's three speaking, and you have different roles at each of them. The morning, I didn't speak. I was just, on kind of an introduced, hi, how you doing? At lunch, I was the featured speaker, and then at dinner, I was the MC and had to introduce him. And in the meantime, we're just sitting there and spending the whole day together. And after it was over, we hung out, and I love the guy. I think he's fantastic. So, Bozich, you and I will be on the same page. I will now be rooting for the White Sox hard so he can tell all those other people to go spit in their hat. Because he's 70, whatever he is, some number, 73. Now all of a sudden he lost his ability to talk to anybody. I mean, please, please. It's just unbelievable. It's talking about letting the cake bake. They didn't even let the White Sox get the mix out of the box, and they want to just bash him. Let him at least maybe get to spring training before you start deciding he doesn't know what the hell he's doing anymore. Please. It's unbelievable. So people are so sure it's not going to work out. Now I hope he goes like 162-0. I mean, that's, yeah. Yeah, so no, we'll take a break and then we'll get Rob Nyer on. So we have something to talk about. We have to talk about the Blake Snell fiasco in Tampa, and we'll talk about Tony La Russa coming back to manage. And we'll try and survive another 20 minutes with Stinky Stinkerson here, my dog, and then get the hell out of here. So thanks for being with us. It's a Thursday, ESPN 680-1057.
You're listening to the V-Show podcast. Listen to Bob Valvano weekdays noon to 3 only on ESPN 680 and online at ESPNLouisville.com.
You're locked on the V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Well, we're efforting Rob Nyer. Not sure we can track him down. I hope so. My guess is since the La Russa thing, maybe his phone's ringing off the hall, off the wall, people. Between that and the Blake Snell thing, my God, he's got to be in great demand to have people ask him, hey, Rob, what the hell's going on? So, they're just letting him have it. Seems like a huge mistake. Hope I'm wrong. Why? What I want to know, when people say stuff like that, I want to know why. So let me get this straight. It's a huge mistake because he hasn't managed in 9 years. The game is, he's not going to be able to master the nuances of the game 9 years later. Because he's too old, he's not going to make it from the dugout to the mound. He's going to go to change a pitcher, and he's just going to take a nap on the first baseline. He's just, I just can't make it. I mean, what is the huge mistake? I mean, based on what? That he was a loser? That the guy won everywhere he went. Everywhere he went, he won. I just don't get that. He's not actually playing. Maybe that's the confusion. They think he's going to be what the hell is the name of the guy with the Indians this year, the Cleveland Indians? Robin here, he'll tell you. Rob Nyer joining us right now, baseball expert and good friend of the show. What was the name of the great manager? Lou Boudreau. He's Lou Boudreau? He's going to be a player manager? He's just managing the team. He's not actually having to play. Go ahead. I was going to ask you, I mean, I understand that whenever you hire a manager or coach, there's an element of the fan base doesn't like who you hired, no matter who, no matter where, no matter what sport. They don't like it. But the pushback on this guy, just because he's 73 and he hasn't managed in 9 years, they make it sound like when he was playing in the dead ball era, of the early 1900s. I mean, is it that big a deal, his age, to you?
Well, first of all, he's 76. I don't know if that matters.
Oh, well, now forget it. He won't be able to make it. He won't be able to make it to the mound to change the pitcher. He'll pass out.
I would say that if someone can be president at 76, which is essentially a fait accompli at this point, someone can manage a baseball team.
That's well said.
That would not be my concern if I were a White Sox fan. I think I would have a legitimate concern about La Russa's ability to functionally interact with a modern player, and especially a modern player who's not white. I base that on a lot of the reactions I've been seeing this morning from people who are not white. He has said in the past a lot of things that suggest he is not down at all with anyone saying anything publicly, or at least baseball players, about racism, about, you know, systemic issues, whatever it might be. Now, you can argue whether or not those things should be talked about, but the fact is that there seem to be a fair number of players right now who do believe they're worth talking about, discussing, reacting to. And so it's not clear, and he's got a very young, diverse roster there. So it's just not clear to me that he's the right fit for this team right now.
I would be surprised. I plead guilty to being a little biased. I might have shared this story with you. I've told the listeners so many times, they're probably sick of it. But we did a function together in Virginia Beach back, obviously, when he was still managing. So it's over 10 years ago now. And he was on his way to go to Florida. And he stopped in Virginia. And then he made his way to spring training. And we literally spent the whole day together. It was a very weird setup where you had to speak in the morning and then again in the afternoon and then again at night. And we spent all the time between those sessions chatting, and then after the thing at night, we struck up a, I would say, a kind of a friendship about everything. I was asking about, you know, his great work with his foundation, the ARF, the Foundation for the Stray Animals, and how that came about, and he told me that story, and it was very entertaining and interesting. I just think he's a very bright guy. I cannot believe he's going to go in there and would blow up his team over his political views, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I wouldn't even categorize them as political views, because I don't know what his party preferences are. It's just that he said things in the past, and again, we're going back 9-10 years now, and maybe his views have changed. But he said things in the past that suggested that he would come up against some real resistance among players of color. The other thing that would concern me, I think, as a fan, maybe more so, quite frankly, if I were just a clear-eyed, win-at-all-costs fan, I'm not, but if I were, I would be more concerned, probably, about his demonstrated antipathy toward modern baseball analysis. Now, his defenders would say, and he would say, that he was there in the beginning. He was there in the 70s, in the early 80s, which is true. He absolutely was. But when he was running the Diamondbacks a few years ago, his go-to sabermetric guy was, his family doctor or veterinarian or something? You know, a guy who had dabbled as an amateur in sabermetrics, but was nowhere near the cutting edge. And that was 5, 6, 7 years ago. And things have only gotten far more advanced since then. So, again, maybe his views have changed. But he seems 10 years ago to have been stuck in the 1980s or 90s when he was a revolutionary in some managerial ways. It's not clear to me that he has or will be able to adapt to what has become quite a different game in the last 10, 15 years. So we'll see. I mean, it's, historically speaking, it's incredibly interesting that he's going to be managing again. But if I were a White Sox fan, I would not be thrilled today.
Okay. Well, I'm rooting hard for him because I'm closer in his demographic probably than you are, and and a lot of the criticism's coming just because of his age. And I appreciate you saying at the beginning. You're right about that. You're not really basing it on that, which is good. But I think he's got a chance to do well there. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe all the players of color will have an open revolt and overthrow him. But I don't think so. I would be. Let's put it this way. You can like or dislike Jerry Reinsdorf and say, well, he kind of made a solo end run with this and didn't talk to his baseball people. But I think he would be smart enough to not put himself in a position with a guy that he's going to hand him a roster that just intrinsically is going to clash with his manager's views. I find that hard to believe. But we'll see. Maybe they're all idiots. I don't know. It wouldn't be the first time that's happened, but I don't think so. I think he's going to do, and I'm rooting for him. I really am. I hope he does well.
I root for everybody. So I hope it worked out. I would be a great story if he was at 76 able to lead that team to the playoffs. I think you and I, at some point, maybe 9, 10, 12 months from now, we can have a great conversation about how Lewis's first season went.
Well, because, I mean, here's a question. Dusty Baker's no spring chicken, and I don't know if he was regarded as accomplished a manager as Tony La Russa. And granted, he wasn't out of the game as long, but he came back. Do you not think he did a good job with Houston this year?
Well, I think he absolutely did a good job. I think he was exactly the manager that everyone expected him to be. At least, I shouldn't say everyone, but the manager I expected him to be. And I think the manager of the Astros expected him to be a steady hand and absolutely a player's manager who has changed with the time. No question about it. Not to say that he is not traditional in many ways, because of course he is. But he has also he has somewhat willingly gone along with the sabermetric revolution. Wouldn't say that he's bought in completely, but he was brought in, I think, to some degree as a caretaker. Keep that train moving, and yes, they finished under 500, thanks to, in part, a lot of injuries, but, I mean, what a playoff run. So, absolutely. I never thought Dusty Baker was too old to manage. Not 10 years ago, not this year.
I know La Russa a little bit from the day we were together. I mean, using your doctor as your analytics guy, I mean, you kill two birds with one stone. You can get your batting order made out while you're getting maybe a colonoscopy or something. I mean, that's a good use of time.
Time
management. Other managers have to have two different things. Bam, he did one. He was on his way. So, I don't know. I think maybe he's just a genius, that guy. Talking to Rob Nye here. All right, so let's get into this, because I think you trust, when it comes to this especially, I listen, and I appreciate, you know, a lot of the things you've said about baseball and quote them quite frequently, you know, about how fans make a big deal about one-run games, and you've shown me that the numbers say one-run games, the big biggest factor in deciding who wins one-run games is what, Rob? Tell everybody. It's luck. It's luck. That's what you.
Luck, yeah.
Yes, so that's what you've told me, son. I believe it. But you can never. You'll go. I'll go to my grave believing that analytics got in the way of the Rays the other day. That's a ridiculous decision by Kevin Cash. Preposterous decision. There's no getting around it. Because not only if you're going to be playing the analytics game, is that flying in the face of, that was not a typical start for this guy. I mean, I know that the whole point of analytics is eventually guys do what they do. But they're also not Stratomatic cards. They're not, every game's not the same. And this guy was rolling. And anybody who had an eyeball could see that. And if you want to really play hard and fast analytics, he went up against a guy who was batting much better against right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers in Mookie Betts. So just because he was going third time through the lineup, he wasn't tired, he wasn't struggling, he'd only thrown 73 pitches, it just made no sense. But they're so married to analytics, it lets you get in the way of common sense. I would be, you've always said that analytics are a tool you should use. And I wholeheartedly agree. But, like, I read an article, I don't know who the guy wrote it, AOL today, don't blame the analytics, blame the Rays. In other words, it's not the analytics' fault, it's the Rays' fault. They don't spend enough money, so they don't have an appropriate roster. Okay, well, that's a guy who's a diehard defender of the metrics and the analytics. The fact of the matter is, regardless of how they got there, that's not a situation you take that guy out. I understand the guys in the front office believe managers are necessary evils right now, and they really would like them to make no decisions, but my God, that's where a guy can really earn his paycheck and should earn his paycheck, and they blew it there. So, Rob, that's how I feel, and I'm folding my arms, and I'm sticking to my story.
I just wish you'd be a little more honest about your feelings sometimes. You're holding back when you talk to me. I would say this. First of all, I don't have a horse in this race. I think to know what happened or why it happened, you would have to drill deeply into whatever process there was. And I haven't seen that process yet. I will say this. These are just facts. Now, maybe they didn't apply here, but the facts are that A, Blake Snell struggles, as basically all pitchers do the third time through the order, at least relative to the first two times. We know that, as you mentioned that. The other thing we know, this is factual, is that there literally is no such thing as momentum for a starting pitcher, which is to say those first two times through the order, no matter how good they are, don't predict what's going to happen the third time through the order. So it really doesn't matter how well the guy is pitching. I know that doesn't sound right or make sense to almost anybody, but that's just what the numbers say. It doesn't matter who the guy is or how well he's pitched. The other thing I would say about the Rays is that without knowing what the process was in this particular instance, and I don't know what it was, it's the processes. Without those processes, without the Rays doing what they do, there's no way in hell that they have the best record in the American League.
Oh, I agree with that. The World Series. I agree. I 100% agree that what they do in the regular season is beyond reproach. But to me, it's the same analogy as Joe Torre, when he got to the postseason, would use Mariano Rivera for six out saves. He never did that during the regular year. Very, very. Right. But he did it in the postseason because that's the whole point. It's not a regular season game. This was game six of the World Series. This, I believe, was their best chance to stay in that game and possibly win it, was to stay with Snell. And I understand that in the course of a season, you're right. During the year, you got a game in August. There's 50 more games to come. You got to be married to a philosophy or you'll be all over the map. But for this one game, that didn't make any sense to me. Wouldn't you agree that post-game, one-game situations, sometimes you got to get your head out of the book of analytics and kind of be a baseball person for once and not a numbers cruncher?
Well, I think, here's the thing. I think you do manage differently in the postseason. And you and I have talked about this many times, and the Rivera situation is by far the best example. But, you know, it's not as if the Dodgers won the World Series by managing by the traditional book.
Oh, no, they used them. I know they, yeah. No, I know, yeah, I know they use analytics very hard.
Right. So, again, I don't know what the process was. I think the best case I saw, the sabermetric case, was that you can make an argument for removing anybody after two times through the order if you have the right guys lined up behind him and choose the right guys to come in after him. And again, the guy that they brought in didn't pitch well, right? And didn't really pitch well in the entire postseason after pitching brilliantly during the regular season, granted a very low number of innings. So I don't personally know enough about why they did what they did to say they shouldn't have done it. But generally speaking, if you have a good bullpen, you usually should take that guy out after the first two times if you have the relievers lined up behind him. They thought they did, and it didn't work out.
I get it, but I'll tell you two things. One is completely selfish.
Here's the real issue here for me. It isn't what DeRays or Kevin Cash did, and I think he actually totally on board with what they do. I don't think he's a robot at all. I think he's a part of the process. But the real issue is that baseball has incentivized teams to think this way. They have taken the great starter almost completely out of the equation. The Rays didn't have a single pitcher this year who qualified for the ERA title.
Yep.
That's a baseball problem. That's not a Rays problem. They're making the game less interesting, less fun to watch because we don't get to see Blake Snell go 8 or 9 innings anymore. It doesn't matter which game it is. It's not going to happen. And that's a baseball problem.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Selfishly, and I realize I'm trying to be fair here, I'm looking at it, you'll never get a Jack Morris from the 91 World Series again because nobody will let him go that far. They won't let him pitch 10 innings, and you get one of the great individual performances of all time. They just won't let it happen. I mean, if you wouldn't let that guy go past where he was in that game, you know, nobody, you're never going to let anybody do it. And I think the game is the poorer for it. But I also, in this particular case, think it compromised their chances to win because you touched on something that I think is very important. Had they gone to the pen with a guy who'd been a lockdown guy, then you say, okay, well, I understand, you know, the numbers say third time through the lineup's not good. This guy's killing it. But that guy had been scored on, I think it was a record, right? I think they scored on him the last 7 postseason outings they'd have. Why? That's not the guy I want. I mean, it's the same thing with Dave Roberts, to be honest. Kenley Jansen's one of the best relievers in the history of the game. He's one of the best relievers, certainly in Dodger history. For some reason, he's not getting it done right now. You notice they didn't close him at the end of Game 6. He didn't go back and say, well, that the numbers say that this guy should close. They said he sucks right now, so we're not going to pitch him. I mean, don't you think that makes sense?
I do, but again, I would be willing to bet that the Rays had a process, not knowing what it is, hard to say, but had a process saying that this is the best guy to come in this particular spot and get 3 outs. Or for whatever they were hoping he would do. And it was that same process, essentially, that got them to Game 6 of the World Series. So it's simple for me, sitting here in my cozy little house in Portland, Oregon, to say that they got it wrong 2,000-3,000 miles away. But I would like to... I should read more, because there certainly are valid arguments that are on your side of this thing. I just haven't seen them yet. I mean, it's not yours.
All right. Well, fair enough. You're always open-minded and fair-minded, and we love that about Rob Nyer. Rob, take care of yourself. We got to run. They make us leave because other people do radio, too, and we have to get out. So we're going to leave. But thanks so much for the visit. Appreciate it. Well, yes, thank you. Appreciate that. Rob Nyer with us here talking some baseball, which was fun to talk about at this time, even though, you know, I know in this town it's time to move on to other things. But we covered, if you were just joining us, what you missed today, we had some sound from Vince Tyra's meeting with the press. We played some of those cuts and we addressed some of those. Tim Sullivan joined us to talk a little bit about that and a little about the new dorm situation at Louisville. And we talked to Eric Granger, the head of the KFC Yum Center, about the protocol for games going forward, and is there any truth to the Raptors possibly coming to town? Lara Overton helped us preview the Colts game, and we talked to just now with Rob Nyer about Tony La Russa being back in the dugout, as well as the decision about Blake Snell. Let me tell you about my friends at DraftKings before we go. Season's in full swing, and they have one of the great promos I've ever seen. You can bet $1, one single dollar, from DraftKings Sportsbook and make yourself $100 simply by picking the winner of that great game going on in Happy Valley. Do you like Ohio State? Do you like Penn State? Well, pick one, and you can turn $1 into $100 when you pick the winner. Additionally, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new users a chance to receive a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. On top of those great offers, DraftKings offers great odds every Sunday to help you make it rain. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure. To take advantage of these great offers, download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code WHBE key. When you sign up, and you'll get this great can't-miss offer. Pick either Penn State or Ohio State, bet a dollar on them, win $100 back if they win. That is a great deal for a limited time only. Must be 21 or older, Indiana only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and a first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. All right. Thank you for being with us tomorrow, unless you know something I don't. Mike Pratt will be with us, and we'll bring Fast Break Friday your way. Sweeney's got the take coming up next. Be a good teammate out there. Be safe. And we will talk to you on a Friday on The V Show on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Hey, Kentuckiana, Katie George here. How would you like to save an extra $1,000 on a brand new Chevrolet? Well, right now, Coyle Chevrolet in Clarksville is offering ESPN Louisville listeners an extra $1,000 off the purchase of any new Chevy when you use the promo code COYLE75. So visit COYLEDEALS.com, find your new Chevy, then mention COYLE75 at purchase and save an extra $1,000. Coyle, where the flag is flying and Kentuckiana is buying. Restrictions may apply. See dealer for complete details.
The teams are back in action. Get that same feeling starting a new job with UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker and take pride in a good day's work. Earn $14.50 per hour and up to $150 per week in bonuses. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville.